So welcome to Rabbeinu B'chaya Shir Parshas Kisese. One of the many mitzvahs that's described in Parshas Kisese is the mitzvah of, it's usually called Shiluach Hakan, Shiluach Hakein. The mitzvah is described briefly in Perikov Beis, Pasuk Vav. Kikari kan tzibur lefanecho b'derech b'chaleis ala ha'aretz. When you chance upon the nest of a bird in front of you, Ephrelchim obeitzim, there are chicks or eggs inside the nest. Ba'em robetzis ala Ephrelchim ala obeitzim. The mother is hovering over the chicks or over the eggs. Osikach ba'em ala bonim. You can't take the mother and the children together. Rather, shalech tishalach esoem, you should send away the mother bird. Yes, avon tikach loch, and take the children for yourself, be they chicks, be they eggs. Man yitzav loch barach liyomim, in order that it should be good for you, and that you should have length of days. Right? One of the more well-known mitzvahs, you know, certainly there's a certain something to it. What's behind this mitzvah shiluach hakam? So, the truth is the Gemara already, in the fifth parak of Brachos, makes reference to the idea that Shiluach HaKan might be an act of pity on the mother bird, as we're going to see in the Rabbeinu B'chaya. After all, you know, it's in a certain sense heartless to have the mother bird watch, you know, her eggs being taken. It's certainly heartless to take the mother and the birds. Right, there's something cruel about that, and the Gemara in the fifth parak of Brachos seems to discuss the issue. Is that what's behind the mitzvah Shiluach HaKan, or is a different opinion says there in the Gemara in the fifth parak of Brachos? No, the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are einon elegzeros. They're divine decrees, and to try to look for some kind of rhyme or reason for them is not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended.
What do you
put
the mother bird keeps coming back?
So it's actually interesting. The Gemara says shaleach tishalach. The pasuk says send it. You know, keep sending it away as many times as you got to send it away in order to make sure that it's properly shooed away. Right? You don't kill the mother bird. Shaleach tishalach. I feel a male for amen. You know, even 100 times you send the mother away. So the Rabbeinu B'chaya offers a number of different explanations for this mitzvah. And we'll see that there are halachic ramifications as to what the explanation might be exactly. Al derech hapshat, starting at the beginning of Pasuk Zayin, shaleach tishalach esoim v'esabarim tikach loch, on a pshat level, yitzav ha'kosov b'kiyum hamin v'shelo la'akro. The Torah is interesting in preserving the species. Right? We don't want any species going extinct. Now, of course, by your taking the mother and the birds, you're not going to cause the species as a whole to go extinct, right? But this idea that, you know, even if, you know, nature is given to us for our usage, you know, we don't believe that you're not supposed to take advantage of nature at all, but at the same time, you're not supposed to obliterate nature. So by sending away the mother and taking the children, you're showing I take advantage of nature to an extent, but not to the extent to which I'm going to destroy nature in the process. Even though the Torah allows us to kill very, you know, birds and animals and fish for our benefit, the Torah did not allow us to obliterate and to destroy a species. If you're going to take the mother and the children, so it's as if you're obliterating that entire species. Again, there are more of the species out there, but symbolically, you're indicating
that individual family line.
Right, that individual family shouldn't come to an end, and also symbolically, you're saying, you know, we don't want dodo birds, you know, to be extinct. You know, we want, we don't want to cause the extinction of any species. You know, so even within one unit, take some, but don't take all of it. Yeah. Right. In other words, the same way that you don't want to extinguish the family unit, you want to show a certain
honor to the family unit from a human perspective. Okay, yeah. What's very interesting, this pshat actually comes from the Ibn Ezra, is that, you know, I don't know that the Rishonim imagined a world where human beings would have such power that we could actually obliterate a species in its entirety. You know, okay, you shoot an animal here, you shoot an animal there, you know, you catch a fish here, you catch a fish there. The notion that people could hunt a certain type of animal to the point where the animal goes extinct, I don't know if that's, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe they did think about it, I don't know. But certainly, you know, over the past century or so, that's been a very modern issue. And the implication of this pshat, again, originally from the Ibn Ezra, taught in the Rabbeinu B'chaye, is that we do care about not, you know, making a species go extinct. You know, we don't want the bald eagle to disappear. We don't want the dodo bird to disappear. I think it might be too late for the dodo bird. But, you know, we don't want, you know, different types of buffalo to be extinct. So you'll say, who cares? Nature was given to us for our benefit. Nature was given to us for our benefit to use it selectively, to obliterate a certain part of nature. That's, you know, the Rabbeinu Chaya is saying over here, the message of Shiluach HaKan is that we're not supposed to obliterate a species in its entirety.
Two animals should, there's just too many of certain, like deer or whatever.
Right.
So to even out the species.
Right, but not to obliterate the species. Right? In other words, the point that he's making is that, you know, you have to leave the species intact, even if, you know, individuals of the species are going to be killed. Yeah.
Is it not very much a sin? I mean, what sin is a like passage of vision from 1914,
right,
millions upon millions in the United States, and when Leslie was born, and she died in the zoo 100 years ago,
right,
there's no more passage of pigeons. So does mankind collectively feel that they will sin?
Right, so, you know, I don't know what Aveira, if any, it would fall under, but I think the Rabbeinu B'chaye is saying certainly you see the Ratzon HaTorah, you know, even if it's not a specific Aveira that's violated by anyone in particular. What? So the guy who kills the last passenger pigeon, it's all on him? Yeah, how does it work? You know, so I think Rabbeinu B'chaye is saying, you see, whether it's technically speaking Naveira or not, it's certainly not in line with the Ratzon HaTorah, you know, the Torah's will that a species be obliterated. After all, if God created a species, clearly He wants that species to be around.
So is it an Indian to be a member of the World Wildlife Fund and say whales?
Right. So again, like anything else in life, you know, you have to figure out how much emphasis to put on that. But from the Rabbeinu B'chaye, you get the impression that would be, you know, that's a worthy cause. You know, should it occupy, you know, a whole lot of your time? I don't know if it should occupy a whole lot of your time. But, you know, is it a worthy cause to try to make sure that a certain species is not rendered, you know, doesn't go to the way of the passenger pigeon? Yeah, I mean, that's the impression that you get from this Rabbeinu B'chaye, that would be a worthy thing.
Thank you, Mr. Gideon.
Right, so that's a kasha that you can certainly have over here, because after all, if this is really the idea behind it, so forget about, if somebody dinner that has to be an of tahar, you know, has to be in a certain situation, why don't we just say that under no circumstances can you ever take a you know, an entire family of whatever, of animals, of fish, of, you know, of birds, whatever it happens to be. So I think it comes back to the idea that in the end of the day it's symbolic, because here too, by taking the mother and the birds, you're not in actuality obliterating that entire species, but the message is to be cognizant of species and to try to keep them intact as much as possible.
So this is just the mother and the bird, or the eggs?
Again, either the eggs or the chicks. Either the eggs or the chicks.
Oh, well.
Right, yeah.
Does that phrase play out of the shomra?
Right.
So the shomra...
Right, to guard it, right, to make sure that it's not despoiled in any way, right. Right.
Together,
there is this conservationist, you know, if you put it in modern terms, there is this conservationist element, you know, to the mitzvah Shiluach HaKan.
What's that different than what the Rambam
shouldn't view this as a possessive rahman. Well, if they do the same thing, basically, they look like they're saying they're taking it a reason for a point to there's no reason for this. It's got to do it because it's.
Okay, so let's just kind of summarize the shittas over here. So, again, the Gemara in the fifth parak of Brachos seems to have two opinions. Is Shiloach HaKan a demonstration of Rachmanis, or no, it's just Gzeira? The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim quotes both of these opinions, and he says, we paskin like the opinion that says that it's Rachmanis. Yeah, the Rambam says it that way. The Ramban, in his commentary on Chumash, comes along and says, well, it's sort of in the middle. What do I mean? So the Ramban says, it's not that we're meant to show pity on the mother bird for the mother bird's sake, but we're meant to show pity on the mother bird in order to inculcate in us the trait of Rachmanis towards other human beings. Right? So like a little bit of a middle path, right? We don't care about the mother bird per se, but we also don't think that this mitzvah is just like a random mitzvah. The Torah could have said, kill the mother bird, or the Torah could have said, send away the mother bird, and just arbitrarily the Torah said, you know, send away the mother bird. No. There is a point to the idea of sending away the mother bird, but it's not to show Rachmanis to her, per se, but to inculcate Rachmanis in ourselves. That's the Ramban. This Ibn Ezra, that the Rabbeinu B'chayi is quoting, seems to take the position like the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, insofar as we are showing Rachmanus on the bird, on the species of this particular type of bird, and that's a legitimate way of understanding the mitzvah. And then he goes on to say that's how we understand the reward for the mitzvah. You know, of course we know that this is one of three mitzvahs of the Torah where the reward of long life is mentioned, right? The other one is Kibbur Avoim, and then also the mitzvah of Mishkalos. In other words, if you have honest measures. So the Torah also says Leman Yarichun Yomecha, that you should have long life. So it says over here Leman Yit VeOmar Leman Yitav Loch VaRachta Yomim Kasher Lo Hichrata Kol Hamin VeOzav Tohev Lo Karta Hamin. You provided longevity to this species, right? You didn't cut this species short. So Mido Kineged Mido, you should have Arichus Yomim. You should have a long life as a result, right? It's a Mido Kineged Mido. He says, right. And he goes on to talk about different perspectives on the schar of mitzvos in general. And towards the bottom of the page in the Shevel edition, he makes the following comment. It's a long piece of Rabbeinu B'chayi. I just want to pick out certain nekudos that I think are just very, very significant. He says, Shekein motzinu ha-mitzvos, shein bedimyon ilonos sha'osin peiros. When it comes to mitzvos, in a sense, they're like trees that produce different types of fruit. Yesh ilon ose pri chashuv yoser michaveiro, v'chein yesh mitzvah shischar agadol. There are some, you know, there are trees and there are trees. There are trees that have very big and luscious fruit, and there are some trees that have shvacha fruit, and them, you know, they don't really produce. Mitzvos are the same way. Mitzvos are like the different trees. Some of them have a greater schar than other mitzvos. And different mitzvos, he says, have different types of schar that are associated with them. Right? Now, of course, Kibbur Avoim and Shiloach HaKan, there's an association with Arichas Yomim. That's true. But then he makes the following observation. Kvar yodata shemitzvos hachnosas orchim pri schara bonim. You should know that if you're machnis orchim, if you bring in guests, there's a specific reward associated with that mitzvah. The reward is you're blessed with children. How do we know such a thing? She says, I'll give you two examples. For harayos, sarah imenu. Right? Avraham Avinu brings in the archim at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, and right then and there, Sarah is blessed with a child. So you say, okay, how do you know that there's a cause and effect relationship between those two things? Maybe that's just, you know, it's not the schus of Achnosas Archim, it's just that that's when the Malachim were able to be there to give the Besara to Avraham Avinu. So he says, no, there's another example. Gama Shunamis Shekibla LeElisha. Right? When in the Haftarah for Parshas Vayera, when it describes in Sefer Malachim how there was an Isha Shunamis who didn't have any children, And she was maknis areach to Elisha Hanavi in a profound way. She made a separate little room for Elisha Hanavi in her house. So Elisha, goes to the Isha HaShunamis, and he says, you're going to have a child a year from now, just like, you know, the Malachim said to Sarah Imenu. So says Rabbeinu Bechaya, you see in both of these examples that Hachnasas Orchim brought in its wake children, right? So that's not by happenstance. That's because the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim brings as its reward an increase in the family. What's the idea behind it? So he doesn't elaborate, but perhaps one can explain as follows. I mean, if you think about it, what is Hachnasas Orchim? Hachnasas Orchim means you take people who are not part of your family, and in a sense, you make them part of the family. In other words, you feed them, you give them a place to sleep. You know, I mean, in the case of, the Isha Shunamis and Elisha Hanavi, she built an extra room onto the house. I mean, it was real Hachnasas Orchim in the fullest sense of the term. So in the schus of expanding your virtual family, your zocha to expand your actual family, your biological family. You know, maybe that's the idea which he's bringing out over here.
So I think there's even one step even more than the source of having children, because Rabbeinu Bachya brings in his other sefer Kavod Kemach under different topics under zochor, that by Hachnasas Orchim you'll be zocha to have a zochor.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say someone has five or six daughters, mm-hmm. to have a
mm-hmm.
increase more and more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bring the guests. So
that's Rabbeinu Bachya.
Yeah.
Rishitasa, there
right.
here.
Right. 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 Very, very nice. It's interesting to note that there's a Meshech Chachma and Parshas Vayera which L'chora argues on this Rabbeinu Bechaye. Because the Meshech Chachma develops the idea on the Haftarah Parshas Vayera. It says that, you know, again, the Haftarah describes how after the Isha Shunamis was blessed with a son, that son eventually died. And the Isha Shunamis ran to Elisha and she said, you know, you're an Indian giver, you know, you give me this child. And then the child dies, you know. That's, in a sense, I rather would not have had the child to begin with. You know, it's, you raised my hopes. So Elisha Hanavi says to Gehazi, to his servant, run to the child. V'samto mishanti apnei anar. Take my stick and place my stick on the child. Gehazi does so, and the child doesn't wake up. So then Elisha says, okay, I see what I have to do. He goes, he puts himself on top of the child, and the child wakes up and is, you know, resurrected. So says the Meshech Chachma, what was plan A and what was plan B? Why did he first send Gehazi with the mishenes, with the staff, and why did he subsequently have to lie down on the child in order to resuscitate him? So the Meshech Chachma says like this, Elisha had a change of heart or a change of understanding as to in what schus the Isha Shunamis was zocha to this child, right? Initially, Elisha thought that the woman was zocha to the child in the schus of her Hachnasas Orchim, right? The fact that she had supported Elisha. So Elisha said, take the Mishenes and place it on the child so that the child should wake up. Mishenes means something you lean on, something you rely on. The woman had been a Mishenes for Elisha. The woman had been a source of reliance for Elisha through the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim. So Elisha sought to invoke the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim to bring the child back to life. But it obviously didn't work. And Elisha realized that it wasn't the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim that had brought about this child. Rather, what had brought about this child, the Emunas Chachamim, this woman had tremendous faith in the power of Elisha and in the words of Elisha. So it was her faith in the Navi himself that merited her to have a child. So Elisha said, so the Eitzah to bring the child back to life is for me myself to lie on the child in order to invoke the idea of Emunas Chacham, Emunas Hanaviyim. Right? Very beautiful idea. But that idea that the Meshech Chachma brings out, L'chora, is not in accordance with this Rabbeinu Bechaya, because Rabbeinu Bechaya says here, black on white, in what schus did the child, was the child born? The child was born in the schus of Hachnasas Orchim. Right? So in other words, according to Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Mishenes should have worked. You know, when Gehazi put the Mishenes, when he put the staff on top of the child, that should have been enough. Right? This is just a sidebar that Rabbeinu Bechaya has in his discussion of Shiluach HaKan, But it's an interesting sidebar in which, again, he's the same way Shiloh HaKan, he showed, is linked to the idea of Arichas Yamim, and he explained why that's true. So too, other mitzvahs are linked not just to reward in general, but to specific rewards. And he brings this example of Achnasas Orchem, which is, you know, brings about in its wake being blessed with a, you know, being blessed with a family, being blessed with a ben zachar, as he puts it in the Katakamach. Right, so you have other things. I mean, so it's stuck all the money for Rechecha. Right, so you have, I mean, the one thing you have is the various different forms of tzedakah where you're blessed, which seems to be, and certainly Chazal understand in this way, if you give tzedakah, you're blessed monetarily. Right? L'man yivorechecha Hashem alokecha. That's what we spoke about in Parshas Re'eh. Aser b'shil shetis asher. Again, that's a drasha, but, you know, perhaps, you know, it's a drasha that's very, very close to the pshat, in a sense. You know, so that's maybe an example where you have a specific reward that's lined up with a specific mitzvah.
Right after you do all those things, right, of the second paragraph of Shema.
Right. Oh, right. Or the Gemara says that because of that mezuzah, you know, in particular, which is right before that mezuzah, brings about Arichas Yamim. Right. So you know, you have. I mean, you have. But here it's you know, maybe a little bit more explicit that he's bringing out. Okay, so that's one nekuda I wanted to bring out. And then, towards the end of the piece, again, this is page Shin Pei Zion, the Shevel edition, four lines from the bottom. Yesh o dei acheres. Besides the ideas that we brought out earlier about how sending away the mother bird is an act of rachmanus, whether on the mother bird or on the species as a whole, there's perhaps a different way of looking at it, and one that in a certain sense is the opposite of it being rachmanus on the mother bird. Sheyesh b'kiyum mitzvah zo hisoris rachma kol ha'olam. This mitzvah brings about an awakening of rachamim, of mercy for the world at large. V'hu, ki mitoch shehu mishaleach es ho'em, hinehi mitzta'eres v'do'eges al churban kina v'richuk boneha. You know, when you send away the mother bird, lavdavka, feels good about being sent away. You know, we say it's a rachmanis on the mother bird that she shouldn't see her children being taken away. I mean, put it in human terms. If a human mother was separated from her was forcibly separated from her children, and she understands that she's being sent away so that the children are going to be taken off, you know, and meet a terrible fate, which is going to be the fate of the eggs or the chicks over here, from the mother's perspective, it's going to drive the mother crazy. You know, you're not doing any favors to the mother. You're being goring tremendous sour to the mother. In a sense, the mother would rather stick with her chicks or with her eggs to the bitter end. Right? That's a real mother. The fact that you forcibly send away the mother bird, and again, maybe the mother bird keeps coming back and he keeps sending her away again and again, over again, many, many times, it's a tremendous tsar, tremendous act of pain that the mother bird is undergoing. That's deliberate, says Rabbi Bechaye. In a sense, we want to cause pain to the mother bird. We want to cause pain to the mother bird? Why is that? Because when she sees that her nest is being destroyed and her children being taken away, she just gets more and more distraught. And the mother bird, again in his words, is ready to kill herself over what she's witnessing. Every living creature has an angel up there in Shamayim that represents it. So the angel of the birds goes to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, how could this mother bird be in such pain that she's watching her nest being destroyed? How could you allow that to happen? We know that concerning HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, His mercy is in all His creatures.
Mamshich shefa harachamim al kol hamitzta'arim. Batzrichim rachamim urachim aleyim. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears the plight of the mother bird, so his response is to let down rachamim from the heavens, and this rachamim that cascades down from the heavens enables anyone who's suffering or going through difficult times to be the beneficiaries of God's rachamim. Now that's an interesting mahalach, right? Clearly, again, very Kabbalistic, very spiritual. But let's just ask a simple question over here. Right, you know, normally, normally if there's an oppressor and an oppressed, and the oppressed cries out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds with punishment, by punishing the oppressor. Here, you oppress the mother bird, so to speak, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds by sending down rachamim into the world. No, that's not the way it should work. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should respond by sending down punishment into the world. L'chora, right? That's what you would think. So, l'chora, I mean, I think the answer is that only works with human beings. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a notion of hashkacha pratis when it comes to human beings. You know, in other words, that there's direct providence on an individual. Reuven oppressed Shimon, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to seek revenge against Reuven on Shimon's behalf. Right? As we see in various different psukim in the Chumash, right? If you oppress widows and orphans, v'chara api, v'harati eschem v'chara, the Rabbanu Shalom says, I'm going to take revenge against the one who oppresses the widows and the orphans and the like. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu just doesn't do that for birds and for animals. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't take up the cause of an injured bird. Right, that would be hashkacha pratis, and God doesn't extend his hashkacha pratis, his personal providence to birds and to animals, but the response to oppression in the world is for God to respond in a general sense with rachamim. I can't necessarily send down rachamim on the mother bird. I'm certainly not going to avenge the cause of the mother bird, but I will if there's, so to speak, a chattering. You know, if there's a chattering of oppression in the animal world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will counter that by sending down, in a general sense, a certain amount of rachamim, and we human beings can be beneficiaries of that rachamim, which is going to trickle down from the heavens. Again, do I fully understand that? I don't even half understand that. But, you know, I think understanding this comes back to the difference between hashgacha klalus and hashgacha pratis, you know, the more general providence that God has for the non-human world versus the more specific providence that he has for the human world. And that's how a quote-unquote oppression of the mother bird can lead to rachamim for all of us. Yeah.
Maybe the Rav can help me out. I remember something about Rebbe was punished. He said to the crowd, for this you were created and it caused sorrow to the animal.
Right, Gemar Bav Metzia.
Sorry?
Yeah, Gemar Bava Metzia. Yeah.
He was so special, or something they shouldn't have said those words. Because he suffered as a result of this.
Right.
He was so punished because even though this, you know, the cause purpose was to serve him.
Right.
Is that
right. So the question is, so the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that Rabbeinu HaKadosh was punished by not showing a certain degree of rachmanus on a calf that was running away from being slaughtered. He suffered with toothaches, you know, for many years as a result. So don't you see that when a person oppresses even an animal or a bird, that somehow brings about a tremendous kitrug on that person, you know, from Shamayim? I hear it. Maybe the answer is that. You know, again, Rabbeinu HaKadosh was on such a madrega that lack of rachmanis that he showed to the calf reflected a certain lack of rachmanis in his own character, and God responded in such a way. Here, to drive away the mother bird, if it's b'mitzvas ha-Torah, you know, can never be deemed to be a failure in our own midos. You know, because after all, the Torah says, drive away the mother bird.
If you don't, it's if you're acting sinful.
Yeah. Right. So maybe that's the difference.
So other than the fact that it's a misdemeanor,
what should the mindset be when doing it? Is only if heaven is doing, when Shalom's mitzvah?
No, I think.
Or are we supposed to really think we're doing an act of rachmanis? And if we are, certainly, as we just learned, it's a very tough way. It's tough rachmanis.
Right. So I think, according to this interpretation that he's bringing, one is supposed to think about it in terms of trying to bring down HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rachmanis. Let's maybe read just a little bit more, and then we'll.
The problem I can see is this is the mindset of the person. If he'll use that mindset in order to recognize anything he does, and he'll even do that to human beings, even though we realize that's supposed to be up to human beings.
Right.
Thinking this is just the means of bringing the Rachmanis down. I'm going to beat the heck out of somebody because
right, right, right. So let me just read a little bit more, and then we'll try Bez Hashem to address that a little bit. So again, he says that by causing the tsar to the mother bird, it brings down rachmanis to the world in general. Nimseisa omer, so it comes out, sha'amekayim mitzvazo mishaleach, if you fulfill this mitzvah and send away the mother bird, husibo la'orir rachamim al kol ha'olam v'tov lo imohem. It's going to bring about rachamim not only on you but on the world at large, and you will also be a beneficiary. That's why there's a promise of arichus yamim that is promised together with this mitzvah. Kolomar also ashiluach yiel tov lof varach the yamim olof ki arichus yamim v'sibas harachamim, because you will bring down this rachamim from shamayim, so it's going to be good for you. It's going to be good for everyone. Umasasi b'medesh ve'elad varim rabba. And indeed, the Medrash Rabbah says as follows: Mitzvah Shiluach Hakam Tzchara Banim. Right, the Torah talks about if you send away the mother bird, you get long life. The Medrash says if you send away the mother bird, you're zocha to children. Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, im ein l'chol banim, ani nosein l'chol banim. If you don't have any children, I'm going to give you children. Minayin shenemar shalach tishalchus habanim, shalach tishalchus oein, yes habanim tikach loch. Right? Not as habarim tikach loch, that you should take the chicks or the eggs. As habarim tikach loch, you will be zocha personally to have children in the schos of shalach tishalach esoeim. And says the Rabbeinu B'chayiv, medrash hazeh yirmoz el hasod hazeh shizkarti. This medrash really lines up with this idea which I just brought out to you. Namely, why does the medrash say that you're going to get children in the schos of doing shiluach hakam? I mean, after all, the Torah says then you're going to get long life in the schus of the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. Who said anything about getting children? The teretz is that Shiluach HaKan brings down rachamim in a general sense. So once you bring down God's rachamim in a general sense, you know, anything could happen, right? In other words, you could be zochet to anything that you need, including children. I mean, most people who were childless, that's what they want more than anything else. You know, they want to be able to have children. So, you know, they'll be zochet to these children in the schus of the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan because of the rachamim that it brings down, right? So, if you look at the bottom in the notes, Rabbi Shavel quotes the Shalos Teshuvas Chavos Yoyer, right? One of the Achronim. And he says, based on this idea, which Rabbeinu B'chai is ultimately quoting from a Zohar, the following important thing halacha l'maisa emerges. Should you try to do Shiluach HaKan? Now the simple pshat in the Psukim is that there's no mitzvah to go out of your way to do Shiluach HaKan. Well, but even more than that, right? If you stumble, let's say you stumble across a nest with a mother on top of eggs, right? Here in the city, sometimes it happens, you know, that they build a nest on an air conditioner, you know, or in the old building on a fire escape or something like that. So you discover that there's a nest on your air conditioner. So what should you do? So one way to read the psukim, the simple way of reading the psukim is, well, there's no way I'm going to eat those eggs. I don't want those eggs. I don't want those chicks. I'm not interested, you know. Pigeon eggs? Not really my thing. So if I don't want the eggs, I don't need to send away the bird. Right? The whole mitzvah to send away the bird is if I want the eggs. If I don't want the eggs, so then don't send away the bird.
Right? If you look at it from the point of view of the earlier explanation that this is a rachmanis on the bird, you know the biggest rachmanis on the bird? Leave the bird alone! Why do you have to mish with the bird? Let the bird sit there, let the egg sit there. But if you take the position that Rabbi Bechai is outlining over here, that sending the mother bird away proactively brings rachmanis into the world at large, so then when they call you up and they say, there's a Shiluach HaKan opportunity sitting on an air conditioner somewhere on the FDR, you don't say, okay, you run over there and you try to perform the mitzvah Shiluach HaKan, because according to this interpretation it's worthwhile, it may not be a chiyuv, but it's certainly worthwhile to go out of your way to perform the mitzvah Shiluach HaKan. You should do that because even if you don't want the eggs, you should send away the mother. Right? And as we see, the truth is, you know, you see from time to time, you know, even advertisements and the various different Jewish media that Shiluach HaKan opportunities and the like. If you go with a pashut of pshat in the psukim, what do you mean an opportunity for Shiluach HaKan? I don't want the eggs. If I want eggs, I'll go to the supermarket. You know, leave me alone. I don't need to go sending away mother birds in order to get eggs. But if there's an inyan to go out of your way to do Shiluach HaKan to bring rachamim into the world, or as was advised to people who are childless, you want children, do the mitzvah Shiluach HaKan, as per this medrash that's over here, so that we can understand a little bit better that you want to go out of your way to do the mitzvah Shiluach HaKan. Now let's go back to Harry's point for a moment. Again, there's something about this which is somewhat counterintuitive. So I want to cause pain to the mother bird in order to bring rachmanis into the world. I don't know, that just seems so strange. Where else do you have a mitzvah that causing pain should be a sibah, should be a cause for rachmanis? Right? So perhaps, again, you know, just try to understand this. I'm not sure this is correct, but perhaps we can suggest as follows. You know, as opposed to human beings, where when human beings are in pain, it's something that they oftentimes take with them for an extended period of time. You know, somebody is hurt as a child, you know, emotionally or the like, and they can carry that emotional pain with them for decades afterwards into adulthood. I don't know if it works quite the same way in the animal world. In other words, you see in large parts of the animal world that, you know, animals will give birth to their young. And then, you know, once the young are old enough to manage on their own, they'll basically abandon their young. So even if there's a split second or a few moments of pain that the mother bird feels at being chased away and abandoning her nest and her children, not to sound overly trite about it, but she'll get over it. And she'll get over it pretty quickly. Human beings won't get over it. You know, a human being, you hurt a human being in some way or another, you know, that human being takes the pain with them forever and ever until they're somehow reconciled. With the mother bird, you have this sort of unusual situation where the mother bird feels pain for a few moments, right? Intense pain for a few moments. And that pain is important for us to realize because the suffering of the mother is supposed to sensitize us towards suffering of human beings. And we can feel justified in imposing that pain on the mother because, you know what, a few moments later, she'll walk away, she'll go on with her life, and, you know, if you tapped her on the shoulder 10 minutes later, she doesn't even remember that she had a nest with chicks or with eggs or anything like that. Now, I don't know that that's true. I'm not a bird therapist. You know, my sense of therapy, they say, may be for the birds. But you know, again, there does seem to be some evidence of that in nature, you know, that the kind of long-term attachments that we see in the human world between parents and children just don't really exist, you know, certainly in the world of birds. You know, so maybe that's how the Torah can feel justified in saying, cause some temporary pain to the mother so that we can be sensitized to pain out there in general and bring the Rachmanis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. And don't worry too much about the mother because in a few minutes she'll be over it anyway. Perhaps. I'm throwing that out there. I'm not sure that that's true. But again, on the surface, it does seem extremely counterintuitive that causing anything pain would be a cause to bring rachmanis into the world. Okay. Those are a few ha'aris about Shiluach HaKan. Just want to see a little bit further. And...
what about the person
senses away, it feels so bad for the mother. So you yourself feel compassion because of what you're doing. This is a mitzvah. You nullified your will for the will of Hashem. What are you doing? You're taking an egg away from a mama? What type of reason? But Hashem told you to do it, so because you're a servant of Hashem, you've created a special schus of rachmanis in the world.
Right. No, so I think it's partially that. In other words, how do you bring rachmanis into the world? I think in part because you see or you imagine, you know, the suffering of the mother bird, and that sensitizes you to suffering out there in general. Sometimes the best way to be sensitized to suffering is to see suffering, right? If we never saw suffering, we don't feel so sensitized to suffering. So maybe just seeing the mother bird suffer, imagining the mother bird suffer, you know, makes me feel more sensitive to those who are suffering. I wanted to see there's a Rebbe B'chaye, beginning of Perek Chafei. Where the Torah describes the penalty of Malchus. And of course the Pasuk says that you should give the person who's Chayiv Malchus Kedevish also b'mispar Arboim Yakenu. You should strike him 40 times. So the Rabbi B'chai writes Os habeis nekudo b'shva b'samach lo arboim klomar b'mispar arboim below our boy mamish el mispar samach our boy behem lamites the im ken kish omer be mispar avon kil omer lamites. Again, we know that famously Chazal explained that although the pasuk talks about the person who committed an aver for which his chayiv malchus getting 40 lashes, the point the fact is only 39 lashes, right? And it's based on the drasha from the pasuk. Why 39 lashes? It's an unusual number. What is it about 39 that that seems like a good number for Malchus? What's that?
Malchus.
Yeah, why? What's the connection over there? So, the Rebbe B'chaye says, I think this is his own, he says a beautiful thought. Tama mispar hazeh shalamites l'malchus l'fisha hameis tzarech t'chiyah. We know that when somebody dies, he needs to be brought back to life. T'chiyas hameis. V'zeh shechata v'ove al mitzvus adonim nizchayim misa. The guy who, let's say, ate treif and is chayiv malchus, the truth is, on some level, is chayiv misa. He's culpable for the death penalty. Not literally. You don't put a guy to death literally for eating treif. But you know what does happen to him? Chol anasho onosh kares. Right? We know that typically when a person is chayiv kares, in Bezdin he gets malchus in order to be mechaper and to take away the kares. Right? That's the mission at the end of Malchus. So the person who's chayiv kares in a spiritual sense is chayiv misa. His neshama has been quenched in some way. So Malchus gives him back his neshama, right? Malchus resuscitates him spiritually. He was previously chayiv kares, and now the Malchus takes the kares away. Ki bozeh yichyeh. Through the Malchus, he's brought back to life. Yoshuv lo tal shel tchiyah. How are the mason brought back to life? So we know there's a tradition based on a pasuk in Yeshaya. Ki tal oros talecha. How are the mason brought back to life? God brings this tal, this dew, with which he resuscitates the dead. Tal is the instrument of tchiyah, of resurrection. Tau, of course, the gematria, it's not a complicated gematria, is 39. So the fact that you strike the guy with 39 malchus, you think you're striking him, you're actually bringing him back to life. That's the tal hatchiyah, to restore him. Right? It's a beautiful pshat. The Rebbe B'chaye himself, I think this is his own. Right? Ki bozeh yichyeh, v'yoshuv lo tal shel tchiyah, ka'osam hachayim, Shehanefesh meutedes lohen. Right? Just like those people who are going to receive real resurrection, so too the Tal Malchus brings the person back and is mechayim. V'zev she'omer mesechas Megillah, kochay dekrisos shalaku neftarm dekrisosam. Again, anyone who's chayiv kares who gets Malchus is exempted from his kares. Bear alulanu bozeh ki lamites shomalkus ukaparas kares Yeshuv lo tal shatchia ki tizke nashu v'sashu v'sharsha. He's being restored spiritually by virtue of the tal malchus. So Rabbi Rubin, I mentioned before, the tal malachos, right? The lamites malachos that are part of Shabbos. So we jokingly said before, okay, 39 malchus, 39 malachos, but it's not such a joke. Take the idea that he says, and let's apply it to the 39 malachos. Shabbos, every week, is mechaya the person's neshama. It brings the person back to life. In fact, the person has a neshama yisera on Shabbos. What gives the person that neshama yisera? The tal of the malachos. Right? The 39 malachos are a tal tchia. They give a sense of chiyus to the person and they bring him back to life. Now, this also is something which, in a certain sense, is sometimes counterintuitive. You ask most people, what's so special about Shabbos? Ah, you know, they wax eloquent about the mitzvah saseh of Shabbos, the beautiful candles, the kiddush, the challah, the cholent, the kishka. These are all mitzvah saseh of Shabbos, right? You know, the three su'udos, right? You know, zachar v'shamar and all of that. They're all nice. But you know where the tchiyah of Shabbos comes about? The tal tchiyah? The tal tchiyah comes from the lamites malachos. A guy who sits and makes a beautiful kiddush, and you know, has a beautiful meal, and then Rachmana Litzlan Friday night after the meal gets up and turns on the TV and says, you know, there's a good game on. That's not the Shabbos. Okay, we know that's not the Shabbos experience, but it's more than just, it's not the Shabbos experience. The whole chiyus of Shabbos comes from the kpeda about the malachas, being careful not to violate any of the malachas of Shabbos. The tal tchiyah is from the lamites malachas. Yeah. Okay. I guess you know he's going with the accepted psak that it's that is lamites. Yeah.
Shabbos takes you out of the world.
Right. 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 But that, you know, this idea that it's tal chiyah to resuscitate the neshama. I think, you know, he doesn't say it by Shabbos, but the same idea that he says by Malchus, I think can be applied to Shabbos as well.
One of the things of the Malchus is this is like a kapora for a person.
Right.
That they have. So part of the Malchus is that the Malchus are stopped and interrupted. The person is making their pants because they got so embarrassed. So
right.
Itself as a kapora.
Right, right. So that.
Does
that
tie in any way with anything over here in terms of what he's saying? In other words, the concept of kapora,
right. Right, right. I don't think you have to come on to what he's saying specifically, but I mean, it is true that the you know, the malchus who service is kapora, as you see by the fact that they're mechaper for the kares. Just want to end off with one thing from the very, very end of the Sedra. The very end of the Sedra talks about the mitzvah of zechiras or mechias amalek. And at the very end of the parasha, Rabbi Bechaye, you know, makes a makes an interesting comment. You know, the pasuk says, "Zachar es asher asa lecha Amalek." Right? You should remember what Amalek did to you. So we're supposed to remember Amalek. And what's going to happen with Amalek? Timcha es zecher Amalek mitachas hashamayim. You should obliterate any memory of Amalek from underneath the heavens. So I don't understand. Are we supposed to remember? Are we supposed to forget? Right? So, Pashat Pshat, there are ways to answer that question. Remember what Amalek did so that you could obliterate them. And then you can forget. So, says Rebbe Bechai, a fascinating idea. It says as follows. Right? He says, HaParsha Azo, the very end of the Sedra, last couple of lines. Parsha Azo, Hischil b'zikara v'simo b'shichcha. This Parsha of Mechias Amalek starts off with remember, Zachar Esa Asher Asa L'cha Amalek, and it ends off with forgetfulness. Lehoros she'asid zichram lishvakeach min ha'olam. It's to tell you that there will come a time where Amalek will be so obliterated that they will be forgotten. Right? There will be a time at which we forget Amalek. The Zeb is Mana Moshiach, when Moshiach comes. The Afal Pishab Shuto Shal Mikra Lufiat Tevos Shalo Yishkach. Even though the Pshat is that you're never supposed to forget, Says Rabbeinu Bechaye, if you pay attention to the trup, you'll see that there's a time when we are supposed to forget. How so? Al kein timso tircha b'milas lo u'milas tishkach hi b'fnei atzma. He uses the word tircha in modern, when we talk about the trup notes nowadays, we call it a tipcha, not a tircha, but it's the same thing. A tipcha is a semi-pause. And the end of the sedra ends off with the words lo tishkach. Lo tishkach, there's not a mercha under the lo, which would mean don't forget, but rather a tipcha under the lo, which in a sense means don't pause, forget. So says Rabbeinu Bechaye, that has a double meaning. Don't forget, but there will come a time where forget. Right? In other words, where we separate the lo from the tishkach. And for that reason, by the way, he says grammatically, it's not lo sishkach, right, which would imply that the two words are together, but lo, comma, tishkach. Right? Don't. There will come a time where a malek will be no. Tishkach. Forget about them. Hine yamim boim shetishkach kishyeva zichra min ha'olam. The time will come where Amalek is going to be entirely obliterated, and we will forget them. It's very reminiscent, actually. There's a vort from the Vilna Gaon many centuries later, where the Vilna Gaon has a similar kind of drasha by the Aseres HaDibros by Lo Tirzach. Right? Also, it's the same trup, a tipcha, and then a dogesh in the tough. So, says the Vilna Gaon, there are times where you do kill. I mean, there are times, you know, a soldier goes to war or something of that nature, right? So it's a mitzvah, you know, melchemes mitzvah, you know, to kill. So lo tirzach, in general, thou shalt not murder. But there come times where you have to put a separation between the lo and the tirzach. There are times, you know, I mean, we might say, okay, that's not called murder, but in other words, there are times where the Jew is called upon to kill others. If it's a milchama of defense or a milchama mitzvah or something of that nature, you know, there's a time for everything. There's even a time for killing the enemy, and you know, tirzach applies, you know, applies under those circumstances. That line of thought originates here with the Rabbeinu Bechaye, lo tishkach, don't, but sometimes forget. There will come a time where we are going to forget Amalek and their memory is going to be obliterated. Right, that's why I say he works it through. In other words, you know, what's that? Even lotinov, right? In other words, you have a concept of yibum, which is not exactly adultery, but in other words, it's similar. In other words, everything in the Torah, you know, there's always a certain circumstance where, you know, there's an exception to the rule. I mean, just about everything, there's an exception to the rule. Right. In other words, you know, you'll find something where you know there's such a concept.
Why would we want to forget Amalek?
Well, because as long as Amalek is in the world and around, it means that the world is incomplete. When Amalek is obliterated, and there's no need to remember them anymore because it's a distant memory, because you know Amalek and everything he represents is not part of the world anymore. So then, that's going to imply that the world has come to its completion. I wish everybody a good Shabbos.